From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Political scandals are nothing new, and some of you may remember some of those, others maybe not. Yet many scandals have had significant historical impact on the United States. So we wanted to dive deeper into these, and what better way to do that than with a new podcast? Political scientists Charles Hunt and Jacqueline Kettler are the hosts of Boise State Public Radio's newest podcast, Scandalized: Political Impropriety. And we are lucky enough to have Charlie and Jackie joining us now to talk more about this. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Always great to join you.
So I want to start with some background. How you both became political junkies, basically, as I think you both called it in the podcast trailer, politics version of celebrity gossip. So, Jackie, let's start with you. What really drew you in to politics?
Oh, man. Like, I just remember even in elementary school being fascinated by campaigns and elections, like really kind of watching them happen. And so that kind of passion just followed me all the way through. And of course, things like political scandals always attract a lot of attention, right? Like, what is happening? Mm. Oh my gosh, like, what does this mean? What might the effects of this be? And then, of course, once Charlie joined us here at Boise State, it was great because then I had a fellow enjoyer of chatting about political scandals.
So, Charlie, where did your desire to know more about politics come from?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like I grew up sort of coming of age into politics at a time when I was feeling, I had a very sort of high view of politics and, the founding fathers and all that. All the ways that politics is supposed to work and government is supposed to work. And so seeing when, public officials sort of invert that in a way, when they get caught up in some of these scandals and when they betray the public's trust, I feel like, both as sort of a consumer of politics and for Jackie and I as both political scientists, this is sort of a point of fascination for us when things go wrong, when the relationship between constituents and the people who represent them go awry thanks to one of those people violating the relationship. That's I think what we find super fascinating about a lot of this stuff. Plus, it's just great gossip.
Well, and you're both professors at Boise State University. So I'm kind of curious too about how, when you're teaching a class, do you get the opportunity to talk about these political scandals, and what's the reaction, from students maybe when they learn about some of these scandals, Jackie?
Well, and as someone who teaches state politics, I mean, there's a lot of wild stuff that happens in state politics. And often students don't know much about what happens at the subnational level. And so it is always kind of fun to get to dig into some of these scandals and what happened, because they're usually not very aware of them. But there's also this kind of tension, right? Because it's like some of these examples that we're talking about, they're not they're not every day. Like, these are unusual circumstances. So there's this tension of not wanting to mislead everyone to think that every office holder is corrupt, while at the same time trying to understand what the scandal was, the effects of it, what were the consequences.
And Charlie, same for you. I mean, you just called it, kind of like celebrity gossip, right? These political scandals. But I mean, for some folks who, politics can sometimes feel dry. At least I kind of felt that way growing up. But there is something about the moment there's a scandal where you're all of a sudden your eyes open, your ears perk up. Is that kind of what happens when you are teaching as well sometimes?
I think so to some extent. It's sort of a push and pull, and Jackie and I deal with this on the show on a couple of different occasions where, political scandals, in a way, they have some benefits in that they draw people's attention to politics. Like, people don't love to pay attention to politics, but sometimes maybe it does so for the wrong reasons and gives the impression that everybody's corrupt. And that's not the message I think that we're sort of trying to send with the podcast. But as far as our students, I won't speak for Jackie, but as far as my students, a lot of them, they came of age politically in the age of Donald Trump, right? The 2016 election is the first election a lot of them were even kind of paying attention to. And they, I think in a lot of ways, they are kind of numb to a lot of the scandals. I mean, we've had a couple of blockbuster scandals in just the past couple of weeks that, you know, they sort of keep coming in an election year. And so I don't blame people, especially our students, when they sort of look around and think like, oh yeah, well, whatever, just another political scandal. And so in a lot of ways, they're kind of jaded in that way, I think.
You know, I think that's such a good point that you bring up, right, about the college age students that you're teaching. I mean, my children aren't college age, but, you know, they're in seventh grade and in 11th grade. And it hit me the other day that I was like, the only political framework that they are aware of is this Trump era. And they are kind of, as you said, almost numb to like politics in a way, or the nitty gritty of political scandals. And but yet, Jackie, when I look at when I grew up, right, when there was a little political scandal, I mean, everybody just was talking about it and you're so almost surprised by it, right? So how do you kind of talk about that this is not how politics has always been in this era that we are living in?
Yeah, it's always a bit of a challenge, as you know, what is usual and unusual? Because as Charlie and as you mentioned, what may seem usual and normal now for us, you know, several decades ago, it would be like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Like, this is really hard to process. And to your point, like, and this is true in our podcast, some of the scandals we talk about were huge points of discussion, dominated the news. But yet, even like a decade and a half later, a lot of people may not really remember the details or the consequences of those. So we thought it was worthwhile to revisit them and try to understand what they can tell us about American politics, while also trying to understand, you know, kind of dive into maybe what is usual, what isn't, maybe what should be more normal, you know, those types of things.
And Charlie,
I do think it's where we felt like we could make a contribution as political scientists of lending some of that expertise and the things that we've learned in the non-scandal universe, and to try to bring them to bear to understand not just how the scandals worked and whether some people got away with it, some people didn't, but also this question of, you know, what do voters actually care about in terms of their politicians' behavior, and what don't they care about, and how has that changed over time? Because I think Jackie's right, it has changed over time.
So I want to give folks a little bit of a sneak peek. So I want to set up this clip that we're about to listen to. This is from your first episode, which drops this coming Monday, September 30th. So this clip we're about to play, in this episode, you are looking back on former Illinois Governor Rod, I can never say his name right.
Blagojevich.
Blagojevich. Okay. I do remember the scandal. This was his attempt to sell then President-elect Obama's U.S. Senate seat. So let's take a listen to this clip.
This conversation is the last straw for Patrick Fitzgerald. He still has a case he wants to build, but the sheer brazenness of this and the immediacy of it forces him to act early. He can't just let Blagojevich actually sell off a seat in the U.S. Senate, or even worse, take it for himself. So his team assembles the case they've made so far, they collect the wiretaps, they collect the other evidence, and they act before it's too late. At 6 a.m. on December 9th, a month to the day after the infamous Golden conversation, the head of the FBI's Chicago office calls Blagojevich to tell him there's a warrant out for his arrest. Blagojevich responds by asking, "Is this a joke?" It was not.
Okay, so Charlie, when this scandal happened, it was mind-blowing. And yet, here we are, you know, 2024, and maybe people would think, well, I mean, maybe politicians would try to do something like that. But what was it that drew you particularly to this scandal, and in fact, wanting it to be your first episode and really digging into this?
For me, it was one of the first major scandals that I was really paying attention to as someone sort of growing up caring about politics. I think what also drew us to it was the brazenness of it. The fact that this was clearly, you know, a governor feeling like the rules don't apply to him, right? And sort of, I felt like it really captured this question we were just talking about, where, you know, the offices that these people hold at the end of the day, and the offices in this case that Blagojevich was in charge of appointing someone to, at the end of the day, they belong to the people, right? They're elected offices. And in this case, this is a governor treating the office like it's a slot machine, right? But treating it like it is something that exists for him to cash in on. And it was, it's sort of, in a way, it's such a fundamental violation of politics and representation as we know it, that I you know, we thought it was maybe a really good one to start out with, and someone basically trying to get as much as he possibly could out of this in such a brazen way. You know, plus you have this element of Rob Blagojevich as this showman, right? He's a really, I mean, a lot of these people we covered, in addition to being deeply corrupt, they're deeply entertaining and can sort of capture our attention while we maybe try to feed you some of this medicine of political science. So that's why we thought he might be a good candidate for the first episode.
And Jackie, what do you think, if any, lessons are could be taken away from what Blagojevich did?
Well, one thing that's really interesting about his story is how he gets caught. And so, like, that was, you know, really interesting to dig back into, as well as, like, that he actually gets in trouble, right? Now, I mean, in the episode, we get into long-term what ends up happening. But so there's this interesting, I think, as well, like, you know, what happened, the consequences, and then kind of moving forward. And I think one element of the story is, you know, he was caught. He did face consequences for what he was trying to do, which is why we, you know, what we want to see in these situations, that we have these systems and that they were working the way that they should, and that he wasn't able to actually sell this U.S. Senate seat.
Okay, so let's head into a little bit of episode two. Okay, I remember this story, and it was crazy when it happened. And even reading up on it again for this interview with the two of you, I was like, this one is just seriously stunning. So we're talking about former South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. He went missing for a little while, but it's because he was having an affair with a woman from Argentina. That's not what he told everybody, though. So let's take a listen.
And yet somehow the situation was going to become even more confusing. Later on Monday, Sanford's communications director, Joel Sawyer, explained that Governor Sanford had been hiking the Appalachian Trail for the past several days. But this explanation really set off a media firestorm.
It turns out he was simply out for a long walk.
His office saying Sanford wanted to clear his head after a tough legislative battle over stimulus spending.
So he turned his cell phone off and went for a hike.
Sanford finally checked in Monday, saying he was hiking on the Appalachian Trail.
He was off writing, and then we find out he was on the Appalachian Trail. What's the deal?
What is the deal? I guess the obvious question is, where does Sanford fall on the "our governor has wandered off into the woods, how worried should we be" scale?
Meanwhile, confusion, and it turns out misinformation, continued to spread among Sanford's staff.
A little bit later on that evening, this says that the governor is hiking the Appalachian Trail and that he'll be back in a couple of days. Now, at the time, it's important to remember that everybody in the office thinks this is true.
The icing on the cake came from Sanford's lieutenant governor, Andre Bauer, whose interview that Monday only added more fuel to the media firestorm.
The lieutenant governor, who would be in charge in the governor's absence, didn't even know he was going away.
I haven't talked to him, and his office hasn't contacted me. I don't know whether they know where he is or whether they don't know where he is. So I don't know what to tell you on that, because I don't know.
Okay, so Jackie, he literally went missing. I'm trying to remember back to this. I'm like, if he had just told people before he left, well, I'm going to go hike the trail, I don't know if any of this ever would have even come out. Because, I mean, he wasn't hiking the Appalachian Trail.
I think you're right. Like, it ends up catching so much attention because the staff starts giving conflicting reports about where he is. And that just raises more and more questions to where there's so much focus on where he is.
And we find out that he's having this affair. And I mean, and again, if he had just said, I'm out on a hike, I don't know if any of this ever would have been uncovered. But again, this just explodes, this scandal.
It does. I mean, because this big question. And I think fairly, because suddenly you have a state that is who's in charge? Who makes decisions?
Missing their governor.
Right. And so the lieutenant governor didn't even know he was leaving. And so there was this kind of vacuum there for a while, right? Of like, well, what's mm-hmm. going on? What's happening? And just like, I think that can raise some uneasiness, right? Among state residents of what is happening.
So sometimes it seems that these political scandals are kind of a flash in the pan, right? They're kind of sexy. You kind of learn all this stuff and then it goes away, never to be heard again. There are other times, though, where these scandals have lasting consequences. So I want to play a clip from an upcoming episode because this scandal, some say, really was the catalyst for starting a war. So let's take a listen.
Brooks walks up the center aisle of the Senate chamber and approaches Sumner's desk from the back. Here's Dr. William James Hull-Hoffer, an historian at Seton Hall University.
All indications are that this attack took Sumner by surprise.
Sumner has his head down, again, signing these speeches as Brooks comes around to his desk and starts speaking to him.
Mr. Sumner, I have read your speech with care and as much impartiality as was possible, and I feel it my duty to tell you that you have libeled my state and slandered a relative, and I have come to punish you for it.
Sumner kind of looks up like, who is this in front of me? Probably didn't recognize Brooks. In fact, I think he says, I didn't recognize him.
And part of that was Brooks's plan. He didn't want him to be able to escape.
As he looks up, Brooks brings the cane down on the top of his head. Sumner's forehead immediately explodes in blood, like any head wound, right? And then the beating begins.
Okay, so Charlie, I'm assuming a lot of people may not know about this unless they're big history buffs, because this happened, in 1856. Talk to us about the caning of Senator Charles Sumner.
Yeah, this was, this is an incident that maybe rings a little bit in some people's heads. This is something I had mm-hmm. to remind myself about as we started to learn more about it. But this is 1856. This is the heat of the slavery debate in the years leading up to the Civil War. This was, a part of a bigger fight over whether the new territories of Kansas and Nebraska were going to be states that allowed slavery or free states. And during this process, Charles Sumner, a senator from Massachusetts, gets up and makes this really, really fiery speech, not just about slavery, but hurling a number of personal insults against Senator Andrew Butler of South Carolina. Preston Brooks is Butler's actually second cousin, and Brooks is in the House, and Brooks sort of takes this opportunity to sort of punish Sumner for what he has said in one of the manners that apparently you did in the 1850s, which was to take a wooden cane that he used for his limp, walk into the Senate chamber, and basically beat him into submission, and Sumner nearly dies as a result. So this is kind of a microcosm of the fire that was behind the slavery mm-hmm. issue at the time.
And Charlie, I mean, some political experts, as I mentioned, say that this moment really sparked the Civil War. Is that accurate?
We talked to a couple of historians for this purpose, because we're political scientists, we're not historians, and there is a difference.
Yeah.
But what they said, they agreed basically that this, this wasn't the cause of the Civil War, right? The slavery yeah. issue more broadly was the cause of the Civil War, and this was years in the making, and these tensions already existed beforehand, and they got worse afterward. But what it did do was, they called it a catalyzing moment, that it you know, the both sides of this conflict, the, you know, the South and basically everybody else saw this conflict through their own lenses, right? The North saw this and thought, you know, oh, well, the South are barbarians. They'll beat us into submission, literally, if we speak out about slavery. And the South saw what Sumner did, and they thought that was the scandal, that Sumner's speech was the truly scandalous part of this, that they would impugn their honor in that way. And so it reflected this deep, you know, we think we're polarized now. This reflected a really deep polarization at the time, and it put that on display in a very violent way that, you know, did it cause the Civil War? No, but it was definitely one step along the way that put it into perspective in the years leading up to it.
So the next clip I want to play is another upcoming episode. And this is about some examples of members of Congress who potentially traded stocks based on insider information that they actually get as members of Congress. Let's take a listen to this.
And I actually think the clearest example, the one that made the most headlines, comes from now former Republican Senator from North Carolina, Richard Burr. Burr had been serving since 2005 and was a pretty influential member of the Senate. At the time, he was the chairman of the very powerful Senate Intelligence Committee. On January 24th, 2020, the Trump administration's top health officials held a briefing with all members of the Senate about the coronavirus outbreak, which at the time was primarily centered in China. Then 2 weeks later, on February 13th, Burr and his wife sold personal stocks totaling between $600,000 and $1.7 million in 33 separate transactions. According to ProPublica, this was Burr's biggest single-day stock sale in over a year. Most interestingly, the sale included $150,000 worth of stock in Wyndham Hotels and Resorts, $150,000 in another hotel company called Extended Stay America, and up to $65,000 in Park Hotels and Resorts.
These stock sales came about a week before the markets started to slide, as the crisis in Asia was coming to a head, and as senators started to get daily briefings here on Capitol Hill about the looming threat.
Okay, so Jackie, this is something that, as I mentioned, these members of Congress get this insider information. You're not supposed to use insider information to trade stocks. That's illegal. Why was it important to go back to a fairly new scandal just four years ago?
Yeah, and this is one of these scandals that I think people today are like, people today are very concerned about elected officials using their offices for personal gain, right? Whatever that might be. And this is kind of one of those pathways that we can see where there's concerns that members of Congress are using information that they're getting in a privileged setting to then benefit. And we talk in the episode that it's hard, right? Like some of this, like who's doing the trading, right? Like it can be a little hard to like draw that exact line on that the member themselves is trading on this information. But this is definitely the type of behavior that many Americans are concerned about. And we thought it was important to dig into, you know, why is this concerning? What seems to be happening? And are there ways for us to try to address or stop this behavior?
So you're both professors, you're teachers at heart. What are you hoping that folks learn or take away from this podcast? And Charlie, let me start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would like people to take away, I think, what that there are different gradations, right? So, you know, we sort of purposely did not do an episode about Donald Trump. Right, we didn't do an episode about George Santos or some of these other folks that have sort of a cascade of scandals around them, because to our earlier point, we didn't want to give the impression that everybody is, you know, making all kinds of stuff up and getting involved in scandal, but we wanted to sort of add a little bit of nuance to the conversation about political scandals to show that, you know, there is, you know, maybe they fall into different categories, that there's some stuff that is, you know, in this case, in the insider trading case, actually not illegal because of some constitutional provisions, but something that, based, you know, something like 87% of Americans polls show would support a law that banned members of Congress from trading stock while they were in office. Meanwhile, there's other stuff that's, you know, maybe technically illegal, but that voters don't really care about so much. And so part of what I saw, what I see our jobs as, is kind of drawing those lines, trying to sort out this from that, and try to draw those out for people who sort of, who understandably sort of look at politics, look at all these politicians and put them all in the same bucket and say, well, they're all corrupt. And so that's one thing we tried to do that I hope people will take away from this.
And Jackie, what do you hope folks will take away from it?
Right. I think we hope to help develop a better understanding of our politics today, how we got here, what's happening, what people, you know, kind of those opinions and behaviors with, you know, by looking at these scandals through a political science lens. So trying to bring that analysis and deepen our understanding of what's happening through what we think are, I mean, at times pretty entertaining or horrifying scandals that provide this lens for us to kind of think about and discuss more generally what's happening in our politics.
Well, I have to say, I am super excited for this podcast. I'm a huge podcast listener, so very excited for this. I want to thank both of you for taking time today to talk with us about it.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.